Go ahead and take a look at canoeing, kayaking, and something called adaptive paddling. Coming up here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, Larry Mueller here. And my guests today, Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga, the world's largest paddle sports shop. Go online to rutabaga.com, take a look at what they've got to offer. Nancy Salisbury, and of course, Darren's been with us. How many times? I don't know. Lots.
14. I just made that up.
You made that up. It's actually been more than 14 times. But Nancy Salisbury has not been with us, has never been with us before, and great to have her. She directs Rutabaga's outdoor programs. And Nancy, nice to have you with us, too.
Great to be here.
So we'll talk with Nancy and Darren today about canoeing and kayaking, and then, as I said, something called adaptive paddling, and certainly we'll invite your questions and comments as we go along today. Let me give you the number. It's 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. This is just to begin with the flooding and so forth. Probably not the safest time to be out on some of our waters, at least.
Yeah, I'd say anything that's, especially the smaller rivers, tend to go up and down very quickly. I've been paddling a lot this spring because the water's been good. Rivers that are traditionally a little bit lower have been up, like the Pecatonica and the Grant and such. But those are also the rivers that are flooding right now. And,
yeah.
Just stay off of them. I mean, Wisconsin's up, but I think it's still pretty safe.
On the other hand, you've got, and just to be a little parochial for a minute here, but the Madison Lake chain, there's no wake measures on the Madison Lake. So, and living on Lake Monona, it's pretty quiet out there right now, and a nice time to get the kayak and the canoe out.
Right. I mean, it's kind of a drag to, you know, buy a house on the water and not be able to use it with your equipment, but on the other side of it is this is the perfect time to get out and try it when it's nice and quiet. It's a beautiful time to be out there.
Yeah, it definitely is. Well, you've created a program to get people with physical and other disabilities, like brain injuries and stroke victims, out on the water. And Nancy, tell us about that program. Is that your program?
Well, it's one of the things, we do through outdoor programs. It's again, we think being on the water is a wonderful experience for anybody. And when you look at people who have challenges getting around on land, being on the water can be a really freeing experience. Mm. The barriers disappear. And, you know, with a little bit of tweaking of gear, you can pretty much figure out a way that anybody that wants to enjoy the water can get out and do it.
And you've been doing this now for a little while, but what's the response been?
I think the response is good. Every year the program grows a little bit more. Every year we reach some new audiences. So, you know, like you mentioned, the stroke victims or people with, you know, degenerative diseases or just groups of people who have kids with autism or those kinds of issues are people that could fit well into the program that we do.
Yeah, or people who just have suffered serious injuries. I was reading somewhere, I'm not sure, one of your stories about a woman who had a bike accident and kind of bad pelvis issues, and so she was really enjoying the canoeing or the kayaking.
Yeah, and even as those of us, you know, get older and our knees start getting creaky and our hips don't work so well, you know, there's tricks of the adaptive paddling world that can help people with access, you know, even as we get older. So I think there's a lot of possibilities for people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe we can talk a little bit more about that. What are there different kinds of equipment that you need if you're in those sorts of circumstances? Or,
well, that really depends on the level of disability you have. One of my good friends in the industry is named Steph Dutton. Steph is an amputee. He was a firefighter and he lost his leg, and he paddled from British Columbia to Baja, California. And the funny thing is, I knew him for about a year and a half before I realized he was an amputee, because he was never wearing shorts around me. And he was staying at my house, and he was walking down the stairs, and he was kind of, you know, shuffling a little bit. And I said, "You hurt your knee?" And he pulled his leg up. And I'm like, "Yeah, you did, you know." But he didn't consider it a disability. And when he was in a kayak with a spray skirt on, you could absolutely not tell that he had any disability at all. Yeah. And, I mean, he was beating people who were able-bodied and races, and they'd get out and he'd pull his leg off and they just didn't stare at him.
Well, and so somebody like that obviously is really well adapted, but somebody with a different kind of a brain injury or something like a heart attack or a stroke or something like that. What about those kinds of people?
Yeah, that's where you get into working with them one-on-one. You know, they're the experts on what their body can do. And, you know, we bring the paddling skill and knowledge. And so working together with somebody is the way we approach it. You know, what do you think will work for you? Maybe it's working on how do we modify the grip on a kayak paddle so you can hold it with your lesser function on the side that you're stroke affected, perhaps. Or maybe somebody with balance issues needs a little more lateral support in their seat. So there are pieces of equipment we can use to help provide a higher level of support than you would in a typical kayak seat. So there's a wide range of things from, you know, very simple, you know, duct tape and foam to pieces of equipment that are a lot more technologically, you know, advanced.
Yeah. Talking canoeing, kayaking, and adaptive paddling today with Darren Bush and Nancy Salisbury from Rutabaga of Madison, and inviting your questions and comments as we move along here today. You may have a question about the adaptive paddling, but you may just have a question about what's the best canoe or the best kayak or information relating to those things or where to go. Give us a call. The number 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us, too, at talk@wpr.org. So you can do that. Do it that way, too. I know there's you guys have an open house for adaptive paddling as well coming up later this summer, do you not?
We have two different options. At Rutabaga at the end of July, we have a program that's just there at the back of the store. It's kind of a low-key opportunity for people who are interested to just, you know, stop by. We can get them in a boat or just chat with them, talk about possibilities and options. And that's Sunday, July 27th. So that's at the store. We're also excited because we're doing a new program this year in partnership with Wilderness Inquiry. They're a company out of a nonprofit out of Minneapolis who's been doing trips for people of all abilities, adventure trips, boundary waters trips, skiing trips in the, you know, the higher Arctic for 35 years. And they're really leaders in getting all abilities out into the wilderness for adventure. So we're partnering with them to have an open house at Lake Wingra on the last Sunday in June, the 29th of June. So that'll be a lot of fun to have us working with them. And I think we'll have a Voyager canoe. We'll have lots of canoes and kayaks for people to try. Just a lot going on that day at Lake Wingra.
Boy, that sounds so. And of course, Lake Wingra is in Madison. So, and you can find out, I assume, more about what's going on your website.
Yes, if you go to, it's outdoor program, or sorry, it's rutabaga.com/outdoor programs. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be there's a calendar on there that has our activities on there.
Okay, so those are and have you had those events in the past?
The open house at Rutabaga, this will be our second season. We had one early in June this year, and then we'll have the one in July. We tried one last year, and it was very successful. Mm-hmm. But the partnership with Wilderness Inquiry is a new program for this season.
Well, I'm thinking about the all of the gosh to do a wilderness experience would be if you're. In a wheelchair, can you do a wilderness experience?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. But the thing about Wilderness Inquiry that's wonderful is they don't have disabled people trips, or they don't have able-bodied people trips. They have trips, and they all work together to accomplish their goal. And so if you go on this trip, there may be somebody on there who's in a chair who has mobility issues, obviously, on a portage. They'll just rig up something so they can pull people around, and everybody works together. There's no, it's not like they're the client and the people on the trip or helpers. It's like they're all together and they all have the same goal. And it's a really integrating thing. In our society, sometimes we forget that we're all in this together.
Yeah, it sounds like a great experience for anybody. Let's talk a little bit about equipment. And I'm a blank for a second there, but the kayaks these days, I would think for somebody who had not able to be fully functional, you'd want a different kind of kayak or a different kind of – or are there kayaks that are made specifically or that could be adapted to somebody from a wheelchair, let's say?
Again, it really depends on that person's level of function. I think where we'd probably start with a boat. There certainly are boats that are more stable than other boats. And so initially, looking at a boat with high stability might be a factor. But as somebody builds a skill level, There's no reason why they can't get into, you know, a boat that is, you know, narrower, mm-hmm. you know, again, a little higher skill required. There's no reason that they couldn't do that if that was their goal. Again, I think it depends on the individual's goals and what they want out of the experience. But I think there's something for everybody.
Yeah. And we work with a gentleman named Kevin Carr, who is he's an engineer, but his passion is paddling. And he's developed several adaptations to canoes and kayaks that already exist. And one is kind of training wheels for a kayak. They're sponsons that stick out to the side. And you can put them very far out at first to make a rock-solid platform and then move them in slowly as the person gains more skills or more trust in themselves. You can also raise the pontoons out of the water so they don't touch the water when you lean. So it's a really complex system. That's one of the things I've heard about kayaks and canoes for years, is you can't put training wheels on them. Well, you actually can. You can put on this extra flotation.
And so it's describe it again for me. It sticks out from the...
Well, you'd have basically your regular kayak, and behind the cockpit where you sit, there'd be a cross member that sticks out about 2 or 3 feet on each side of the boat.
Okay.
And then there'd be a small, torpedo-shaped pontoon that sticks on the outboard. So it's like a little trimaran.
Mm-hmm. Like an outrigger.
And it works, and you can adjust it then to make it less tippy.
And the neat thing about the neat thing with Kevin too, he's figured out how to attach this system to a hatch cover. So you just kind of pop off the rear hatch cover of the kayak and put this on instead with its system. And so it's far enough back so it's not getting in the way of the paddle stroke, but it's there for stability. He also has built a chair that you can put into the kayak seat that's adjustable with padding and support under the armpits, a little bit higher on the shoulders. It's all these tweaking features you can use mm-hmm. to make it work for an individual. So, again, it's a real individualized kind of thing when you talk about adapting equipment and having these sorts of, I don't want to say contraptions, but these sorts of resources.
They're really, really cool contraptions.
Cool, yeah.
We're talking canoeing and kayaking today with Darren Bush and Nancy Salisbury of Rutabaga of Madison. I'm Larry. Give us a call if you have a question or comment. I'm Larry Mueller. And the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And Jim Packard will handle those messages, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking canoeing and kayaking with Darren Bush and Nancy Salisbury. Again, join us at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call. We'll be glad to get you on the air. What's new out there in the way of equipment? And we talk about this every time you're on the program, Darren. But
and I always say the same thing.
I know, but there's...
they're pointy at both ends, and water hasn't changed its physical characteristics in millions of years. So... there's new adaptations in material. Uh-huh. We're seeing a few new materials out there that are really cool. One of the things that's really growing like crazy right now is kayaks that are outfitted specifically for fishing. We just had a little fishing rendezvous at the shop on Saturday, and it's really interesting. A lot of people paddle, but a lot more people fish.
Yeah.
And this all started because 15 years ago, there was a guide down in Alabama who was trying to fish for redfish. And he could see their fins sticking out of the water, but he couldn't get to them. So he said, "Well, I'll try a kayak." And now it's its own little market. It's really, really fascinating.
And is it how different is it? Is it a wider shallow, a little
wider? The kayaks I'm thinking of have detachable decks. You can either have it covered or uncovered, depending on what you're doing. They're often stable enough to stand in. So if you're sight fishing, you can see the fish and fish to them. So a lot of folks are fly fishing out of them. Actually, one of my staff is up north right now filming another video for Quiet Water Films about freshwater kayak fishing, and they're up fishing for muskies in Hayward with fly rods in kayaks.
Oh, the lucky stiffs.
Yeah, he's getting paid to do it.
Yeah. Someone has to.
Somebody's got to do it. Well, I tell you what, a good-sized muskie would drag him right around the lake on...
Yeah, we call it a freshwater Nantucket sleigh ride. Yeah, it's the world record redfish was caught in a kayak just I think last season, and it was over 40 pounds, and it took him for a ride.
I would think so. Well, I tell you what, let's take some calls. Lou is up first here in Green Bay. Lou, hi to you.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
My question is, I've done some canoeing in my past, but I've always been kind of, I don't know the difference really between the kayak, other than I feel like I'm really disabled in it, that I would freak out about turning over and stuff like that. Is there other things to help us with that are more mentally challenged for kayaking? And what's the difference, like, what would be better for people with, like, arthritis with knees and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Hypnosis and ibuprofen. actually, there's a problem with kayaking as a general rule, and I hear this all the time. You know, I'll meet somebody I haven't met before, and they'll say, "What do you do?" And I'll tell them, "Say, oh, you'd never get one of those kayaks. Those things are scary. You tip over and you'd get trapped." And it's just not true. That's one very small component of kayaking. Most kayaks are wider, stabler, larger cockpits. They're very, very user friendly. The best thing to do, frankly, is take a class.
Okay.
That's what we do with people. In the first thing we do in the class is sort of desensitize them. Mm-hmm. The first thing they do is tip over.
I'll remember that. It'll be a warm day when I get out there.
Well, the water is warm right now, but yeah, there's an instructor standing literally inches from you. You tip over, and okay, that wasn't so bad.
I fell right out.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. I'll bet you're in the Green Bay area. There's bound to be some classes in the Green Bay area, I would think.
You know, there's a kayak club up there. And
oh, there is?
Yeah.
New. Northeast Wisconsin kayakers.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Actually, I'm from Madison. I just happen to be listening to your show. I'm heading up to Green Bay, so I'll be back out to Rutabaga.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And we've mentioned a couple of the classes that you have, but you have other kinds of classes as well, do you not?
Yeah, we try and offer a spectrum. I mean, actually, I should shut up. Nancy's the outdoor programs director.
Yeah, Nancy, what about that?
Yeah, we have a lot of things going on this time of year. Classes for adults teaching basic introductory canoe and kayak skills, as well as, you know, a little more specialized ways to expand your knowledge of the sport as you've been in it for a while. We've got programs for kids. We have week-long camps for kids in the summer that are day camps, a lot of fun. We work with a lot of scout groups and church groups and school groups, and just want to get people out on the water. Again, we just think it's a wonderful way to live life, and being out there is just one of those things that adds richness to life, and we want to get everybody out there.
Well, and just to mention your location, because you're right there, next to the water. So
it's pretty nice.
No travel needed. Yeah,
no travel.
And our deck is almost done. We're building a deck on the back of the shop because I was sick of working in a basement. So we'll have Wi-Fi. So come by and use our deck.
Okay. Well, Nan in Milwaukee's up next. Hi, Nan. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for your show.
Sure.
I am calling because my family has some experience doing canoeing and kayaking out in California. We have a 5-year-old, so I guess I have two questions. One is just if you have any advice about canoeing or kayaking with a small child. When we went kayaking, it was with a really experienced kayaker, and we wanted to try to do it on our own around here. And the other question I had was just in the wake of all of these thunderstorms, we're just concerned about, because we've heard warnings about staying away from these fast-rushing rivers and, of course, the problems with the lake because of the systems being overwhelmed, and whether you would wait a little while, or if there are other particular rivers that you would recommend or avoid, if you just had thoughts about that.
Or lakes, yeah.
Well, we can go backwards, and Nancy can answer the second part of the question. Basically, if they tell you to stay off a river, there's usually a good reason for it.
Yeah.
So I would listen to them. As far as lakes, high water in a lake really isn't that big of an issue. You can feel free to paddle on that. And, as far as paddling with a 5-year-old, my general rule of thumb has been 20 minutes per year up until age 6, and then they can pretty much handle whatever they can handle.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, we start classes at age 8, mainly just because, a group of 10 kids together, just learning styles and developmentally where they're at, that's where we've found it to be most successful in a group. But for families, getting kids out on the water as early as you can.
Well, my daughter got to sail the canoe for her 4th birthday.
There you go.
So it's possible.
Great. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's see. Stephanie in Madison is up next. Let's go to Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie.
I Larry, and hi, Nancy, and Darren. Is it Darren?
Darren, yeah.
Hi. Hi there. This is just what I needed, because over the last number of years, I've gone legally blind. I don't see, I have no sight in one eye. The other, I have basically, I can see images, but there's, you know, it's, I can't read. There's some distortion and there's problems, and it's, you know, pretty, become pretty impaired. Years ago, I took a canoeing trip many years ago. I loved it. And I'm wondering, have you worked with people with visual impairments at all before, people who are blind? Do you have people, when you're doing the adaptive canoeing, do you have them start out just individual one-on-one, or do you have them in classes with people who don't, you know, have adaptive needs? How do you do it?
Yeah, Nancy?
I would say it's different for, you know, people have choices how they want to approach it. A lot of people are more comfortable coming in one-on-one first, or maybe coming in with a friend, and the two of you learning together, working on how that person can help you with the things you need help with and let you alone for the things that you don't need help with. You know, you can paddle the same as anybody can paddle. It's just, you know, okay, you know, let's head a little bit to the left here, or,
right.
you know, someone paddling beside you kind of helping to guide you. But certainly, you're probably picking up with your other senses a lot of information that, you know, those of us with sight don't have. So you're able to add to the experience of the other person by sharing what you observe. So I would say, you know, a one-on-one or the two of you coming in together or working with somebody first might help. But then you could certainly be integrated into programs that had people with sight and without sight.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm real excited. I mean, I really am. I, like I said, the one experience I had was up in Lac de Flambeau, and a week, it was like 4 or 5 days, and it was just heaven, pure heaven. And so I'll be, I don't have a computer, but I will be calling you guys. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stephanie, I'll tell you this. A friend of mine has a brother who's legally blind, and he's actually sees nothing. And he loves to kayak, and he put a radio on the end of the pier. His parents live on the water, and he'd just go paddle. Mm-hmm. When he wanted to come home, he'd just go back to the radio.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Well, one day the radio batteries died. it didn't even faze me. Just paddled around. I said, okay, you know where I live? Keep going a little bit farther. And he'd hear another radio. Do you know where I live? Yeah, a little farther. And then his parents were on the dock looking at the radio and being embarrassed. It was kind of fun.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Stephanie. Thank you very much for calling. You may have a question, too, about canoeing or kayaking or about adaptive paddling. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. In the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. In terms of places around the state that you like to paddle and experience, what are some favorites of let's talk to both of you about it. What are favorite?
I'm not telling. I don't, there's plenty of room for everybody there. I like Door County a lot because of the variety. There's a lot of different kinds of topography up there. You got cliffs on the Green Bay side and more shallow beaches on the Michigan side. I love Lake Superior. I love the Apostle Islands. They're a little bit more challenging because of the cold water, but it is a beautiful place. I mean, if I could only pick one place to paddle the rest of my life, it'd probably be the Wisconsin River.
Yeah?
I just love it, yeah.
Why do you love it?
I don't know. But I grew up in Los Angeles, okay?
And sorry.
Well, yeah, me too. I couldn't help it. My parents were there when I was born, so... It's there's the Los Angeles River. Now, have you ever heard of the Los Angeles River? It's about 5 feet wide in the bottom of a giant storm drain. And that was my exposure to rivers. Now, I grew up in the ocean, which is great, but I never saw anything like that until I was 22 years old and just fell in love with it.
Well, what about you, Nancy? You got some favorite places that you're willing to divulge?
Well, yeah, the close to home places, I think, you know, we have so much right around here in Madison and the state, but I really like going up to Cherokee Marsh. Parts of the Yahara watershed I think are great. A lot of the little rivers that feed into that watershed are fun for just a day outing. For getting away, I do have to agree with Darren that Door County is pretty special. I think there's a lot of wonderful paddling up there. There's kind of too much to summarize.
Yeah.
You know, it's just everywhere.
Yeah, I kind of like, you know, there are some other parts of the state, too. You get away to the, I love the North Woods.
Oh, who doesn't?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the
yeah.
Turtle Flambeau Floyd and places right. like that are still pretty wild looking. And
you know, the other thing is, I was just thinking, is, you know, the McCann River isn't one that's paddled very much, and it's not very well known. It's an hour and 20 minutes from here, straight north.
From Madison.
Up by Princeton, yeah, from Madison. And it is a beautiful little river. It has a nice wildlife area in the middle, Germania Marsh. It's mm-hmm. a Class A trout stream above that. And it's just lovely. And everybody thinks you have to go way north to see beautiful things. But I've been on the Grant River two or three times in the past month and a half and saw nobody, not a soul.
Oh, boy. How many people actually canoe and kayak now? Do we know?
In the United States, about 22 million people, as the last number was 22 million people participated in canoeing and kayaking at least once in the last year. So it's about a tenth of our population.
About a tenth, and that's probably pretty, would that be pretty, what do we have, 5 million people here in the state, so maybe 10%?
In Wisconsin, I think it's probably considerably higher than that.
I would think so, too.
Well, we have a culture here. I mean, this counts people who live in Las Vegas. People in Las Vegas probably don't spend a lot of time paddling.
Yeah.
So, but the Midwest has a very strong paddling culture. I mean, we were settled by, I mean, the first people that explored this place, I mean, the Native Americans were using the you know, canoes. Mm-hmm. And Marquette and Joliet came down the Fox River and in the Wisconsin in canoes. So the first people to come here, other than, you know, the indigenous people, were in canoes. And it's been like that ever since.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it's probably more like 20 or 30% of our population.
Well, Madison, it's probably closer to 50 because you drive around and there's roof racks on every car, and that's one of the reasons we're here. Here's a good analogy. The BMW Riders of America have a contest every year where they count how many miles you send in your mileage if you're a BMW rider. Wisconsin is almost always the top state for mileage. Now that makes no sense. Because it should be, you know, 6 months out of the year, we really can't ride that much.
Yeah.
Florida and California should win. They don't. And the reason is, I think, is in Wisconsin, when there's a beautiful day, everybody goes. because they're rare and they're precious. So I think people in Wisconsin spend a lot more time outside because it is a precious commodity.
I want to go back to the fishing a little bit and canoeing because I'd like to know a little bit more about those. About the canoes and what they're, how they're set up, and because I fish too, what kinds of amenities do you find in these canoes?
Everything from just a simple rod holder to fish finders and everything you'd see on a fishing boat. We see rod holders is the most common. Anchor trolleys are pretty common as well. Small anchors you can drop in.
Yeah.
Especially if you're fishing in a river. You can drop an anchor off your bow, you'll swing into the current, and you can, you know, cast upstream against the current, which is a great way to stay in the same spot. You get hooked on a fish, if you're waiting, it gets kind of tiresome. Mm-hmm. But if you can just sit in your boat, you can just do that, and it slows down. You just pull your anchor up and drift down a little farther. But you can get battery-powered fish finders that can install in a canoe or a kayak. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks are using those now. A lot of folks have GPSs, so they find a hot spot. Like, I mean, the Turtle Flambeau's got, you know, walleye to dive for.
Yeah.
And if you find a spot that's got some submerged logs where you're going to find some structure, you can mark it with the GPS. So anything you find in a regular fishing boat, you can put in a fishing kayak.
Yeah, the Turtle Flambeau Floyd and walleye and muskie. Caught some pretty nice muskie in the Turtle Flambeau, but never out of a canoe or a kayak.
Well,
it's got to be quite an experience.
Well, the nice thing is you draft about 2 or 3 inches of water.
Yeah.
So you can go up in places, even if there's just a sandbar covering the front of a river, you can pop over that where a powerboat wouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
And go up in there and fish where fish haven't seen lures before.
It's a good point. Dan in Appleton, hello to you.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great, thanks for calling.
Hey, I am taking an epic trip into northern Manitoba in about a month or less than that, and we've been looking at these different ways to carry food. You know, the biggest concern we have is bear, obviously. And they sell these food barrels now, and I know they're not critter-proof. However, I think I'm not sure if we're going to use that or a dry bag. The biggest concern I have about these large barrels is their weight. Have any of you guys worked with those or carried food in those or used those at all?
Sure. Yeah, they're great. It started off as a Canadian thing. Interesting.
Yeah, that's every time I get on a... I Google them, look about whether I get a Canadian company coming out. So.
Right. Yeah, we actually get ours from a Canadian company up in Peterborough.
Okay.
But yeah, they're 30 and 60 liters. Almost all Canadians who trip use them. And it's not so much that they're bear-proof as that they don't transmit smell.
Right.
And the biggest problem I have on trips isn't bears, it's chipmunks. You know,
really?
they'll get a smell of something and they'll start digging through your dry bag, and a dry bag with a 1-inch hole in it ain't dry anymore. So they're also easier to hang. You can clip a carabiner into the handles and hoist them up in the trees. I think they're great.
Do they make shoulder harnesses for them, or not? Are they worth the money, or is it worth it just...
No, you definitely want a shoulder harness for them, because 60 liters is a lot. You can put a lot in there. But yeah, there's a couple of shoulder harnesses. One is Ostrom Outdoors. That's a small company out of Thunder Bay that he develops packs for the Canadian military. They're absolutely bomb-proof. We've got them from NRS. There's quite a number of them. So you're doing the haze, I take it?
Yeah, how'd you know?
Well, it's the epic trip in northern Manitoba.
Is it really? Have you done that, or have you guys been up there?
I've been as far as North House, but I've never been further than that.
Okay. We're going from Knee Lake to York Factory.
To York, huh?
And then we're flying from York up to Churchill for a day.
Yeah,
so
wish I didn't have a job I'd go with.
I have a job, and but it's been a year and a half in planning, so it's kind of we have to do it, you know.
Well, good for you.
And how many days are you going to be gone?
Well, we fly out. We're driving to Winnipeg on a Thursday, and we get to Winnipeg on Friday. Friday evening, we should be on the water if everything goes well, with very little sleep. And then we're paddling from Friday to Thursday or Friday, depending on the water. My other concern is, and you haven't been that far north, but there's a book by what is his last name? Not Hayes. His name just slipped me. But he wrote a book on Manitoba's northern waters.
Kevin Kellen.
No, is that a? No, I'm having a mature moment. But the biggest concern he talks about is winds. Also, once you get closer to the bay, you know, you have a fast moving current, but the wind is also very harsh out of the northeast. So.
It is, and Manitoba or Lake Winnipeg is also not very deep. It's kind of like Lake Winnebago. It's
really?
Very big and very shallow, and that's the part that often people, you know, it's just a lake, we'll just go across it. Well, it's tricky.
Right, and I've read like some of those, like Knee Lake, and also sometimes can take 2 days to get across because of wind.
Well, what's the hurry?
Yeah, exactly.
The last one to York Factory wins.
Yeah, exactly. So good. And you guys have those in stock?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Well, I'll be calling you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. What does it take to get ready for a trip like that in terms of your physical well-being, sort of, so to speak?
Jeez. I don't think it's as much physical as it is psychological. And Nancy, I don't know what you think.
I would agree, yeah.
Because physically, you can adapt the trip to your physical abilities. I mean, I've been on trips with people who were not in that great of a shape. We just made sure that we didn't go fast over the portages, and we took, you know, a leisurely pace. It's more a question of psychological problems. You know, you get out in the middle of nowhere, and the bugs get bad. You just have to kind of learn to deal with annoyances we don't normally have in our normal lives. But I don't know. You've been on long trips too.
That's part of the beauty of it, I think, is you do get outside of, you know, all those amenities and comforts, and you have the chance to just experience the environment. And it's not always fun at the moment, but there's something also very rewarding about it.
If it doesn't kill you, it makes a good story.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you, I want to go back to the events. You've got a couple of events coming up. One on June 29th. That's the first one. That's not that far off, actually.
No. And we're real excited about that. Again, that's with Wilderness Inquiry. Trying to just make paddling available to everybody, regardless of ability. So we're hoping folks will come down to Lake Wingra and try some different boats and learn a little bit and, you know, just explore the possibilities. And then again at the end of July over at Rutabaga on the last Sunday of July, which is what, the 27th?
27th, yeah.
So that's another opportunity. So hopefully there's just, you know, places people can come in a real non-threatening, low-key kind of manner, you know, check it out.
And that's, if you want to come and not get in the boat, that's fine. I mean, if you just want to come in and just, if you're just curious, come and just watch and, you know, get the idea of, you know, maybe I can do that.
Yeah. Well, let's take one more call here from Lee in Delafield. Lee, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how you doing today? I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I'm fairly new to the area. I've been in Wisconsin for 2 years now. I'm originally from Florida. But I've really been having the urge to get out there and do some fishing, maybe some paddling. You know, thanks to the program today, I hadn't considered that. But sounds like a good two-part trip. Will you have any suggestions for a beginner trip out there, get some fishing done, you know, maybe kind of get my feet wet, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part of the question was, my wife has back problems, but I'd like to get her and my three-year-old out there to do a little camping, maybe some canoeing, and somehow might be easygoing and within her limitations.
Okay.
Yeah, this isn't a question that I can answer in 2 minutes, but mm-hmm. it's a question I'd love to answer,
mm-hmm.
or we would love to answer, mm-hmm. frankly. There's lots here. Nancy could certainly help you address mm-hmm. any back issues. We've got a lot of people with back issues we deal with. Like I said, it's not adaptive doesn't necessarily mean somebody who has a serious physical disability, but somebody who just has discomfort.
Yeah.
And as far as places to go, that's something I could sit down with the map and give you a bunch of places and help you with your kid. I've got a lot of experience paddling with toddlers.
Yeah. And well, just for the back, let's just take that back for a second. What is just one or two tips that you might say about a canoe or a kayak with somebody with a back issue?
Well, I think first of all is to ask for help with the things you need help with, including mm-hmm. moving your boat off of a car, you know, getting a boat down to the mm-hmm. water, helping to stabilize a boat. Then another thing that often is an issue is where are your feet and your knees. So if you can find some ways to add some support under your thighs, that often takes the pressure off the lower back when you're sitting.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that typically. And then looking at how long do you want to be in a boat. You know, again, as you're developing a program that works for you or for your wife, short trips maybe to get started and to figure out, okay, how can I be most comfortable? It's you know, we have suggestions, but ultimately it's just sort of fooling around. Each person, you know, taking some time to mess around a little bit and see what makes them more comfortable.
Have we found someone we can't make comfortable yet?
No, probably not.
So.
I don't
no.
think so.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, there's a lot of options, you know, a lot of little tricks.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. And one of the things you probably ought to take a look at, Lee, is our state and county park system. Through the Department of Natural Resources or through the Division of Tourism, you can get, since you're new to the state, you can get a listing of the campgrounds that are available. You might want to try something like that to begin with, where there's pretty good fishing on a lot of those lakes.
I was just thinking you might try Governor Dodge to start with over near Dodgeville. There's two lakes, Cox Hollow Lake and Twin Valley Lake, that have some pretty good panfish and some bass and a really nice campground and some hiking trails, so you can kind of go there for a couple days and see a bunch of different things.
Yeah, and you're not, and if things go south on you, like it rains for 48 straight hours, you're not that far from home. If you're in the Delafield area,
yeah. Plus, right. Plus, you can go to the Red Rooster in Mineral Point and eat Cornish pasties, which is has to be. Yeah, it's got to be down on that.
That's a great piece of advice.
Oh,
That'd be a good place to start.
Yeah,
great. Sounds perfect. I really appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks, Lee, very much for calling. And Darren and Nancy, thank you so much. I want to, again, if you go to rutabaga.com and then / outdoor programs or go to rutabaga.com, you're going to find a place to click on outdoor programs, I'm sure of that.
Yep, it's over on the left side of the website banner.
Left side of the website banner, and you can find out about these adaptive paddling and about all the other programs and things that are going on. Appreciate you being with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our guest, Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga, the world's largest paddle sport shop, located in Madison, and Nancy Salisbury, director of Rutabaga's outdoor programs. And I can tell you that they may be in Madison, but I know for sure that Darren has shipped canoes and kayaks and everything else all over the world, as a matter of fact. He's gotten them in a lot of places you wouldn't believe. So great to have them with us, and I'm sure we'll have them back and we'll do it again. Coming up, we're going to be talking a bit about recycling and zero in on a couple of things. Recycling at events and recycling when you're away from home on one of those trips maybe that we've been talking about. Paul Abramson joins us next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.